Hello, and welcome to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. First, I want to welcome everyone today to the Mornings with Joel CRE Podcast. We're very excited to have you with us. And we've shifted our time in order for us to be able to allow our West Coast friends and family in order to join the show. And guess who our first person is to launch from the West Coast? Well, maybe not the first, but the most recent since we changed the time. Kimberly Brown. Kim, what's up, my friend? How you doing today?
Good morning, Joel. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for inviting me. And it's funny, I just want to say real quick that Joel and I were on a call last week and we're having a conversation. And we're like, you know, we're about 45 minutes in. And we're like, you know what? Let's stop. This is a podcast. This whole conversation is an episode. So here we are. So thank you and happy to be in front of everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Kim, you know, it's quite amazing. And obviously, thanks for getting up early this morning. But, you know, you've become this name that is all over the place as of late. And it's kind of exciting. I credit a lot of it to your personality. Is almost like Alka-Seltzer. Put a little water on it, just, you know, just
fizzle.
So it's all good. But no, we greatly have enjoyed our conversations, and you know, what you're doing is very, very impressive. So, you know what? For those who don't know, just briefly, who are you? And then we'll go into a little bit about your background, and then we'll kind of build from there on some of the other things we were going to discuss today.
No, thank you. And who is she and where she come from? And so you know, my career, my trajectory started long before LinkedIn, although LinkedIn certainly helps. And so I am 30. I said it. I usually say, I usually don't quote it, but I'm 30 plus years in this business, been around a long time, always working for the major brokerage firms. And so, you know, I started in property management right out of school, and then just, you know, things morphed. And then I spent some time in New York, always had a national role. I think where things sort of really took off for me was about 25 years ago or so when I was living in New York. And at the time, my biggest client was then TIA Craft, which is now Nuveen. Yep. And my role was national and just a high profile client. And so, you know, I was overseeing an account. So I'm dealing with brokers across the country with this high profile client in tow. And there's a lot of history as to how that came to be across a couple of these big brokerage firms. I'm a survivor of a whole bunch of mergers and acquisitions, I would like to say. And so that's really, so I'm technically, you know, I'm an investment sales broker in the capital market space. I will say that the brokers, listen, they appreciate me because I've got access to deal flow that they don't. And so what I typically do is I leverage all of my networks, including this network, right? And so I've got a network in the capital market space. I've got a network, and we'll talk about this on this call, a network in the capital raising space and a network of capital advisors. I've got the ARAP National Network of Chapters. And so in that regard, I'm president, one of the founding officers, president of the Los Angeles chapter, ARAP LA, for those that don't know. And the organization's 30 years old, started in New York. For those on the phone, if you've been around long enough, you'll remember a REPNY, which started about 32 years ago. Ironically, a REPNY rebranded to CURE, and CURE just celebrated their 32nd anniversary, which with their roots in ARAP. So said all that to say, I had, that's all my kind of intro, because it's all these networks that I cross-pollinate, and they all feed each other, and they all go somewhere, and they all serve. And right now at this stage in my life and career, I'm able to leverage them all and cross-pollinate, create opportunities for the people, for myself, for others. And it's just all come together in this beautiful potpourri of opportunities. So here we are.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. You know, it's interesting because I was talking about that a few weeks ago, how, you know, you often, and I was a victim of this as well, you join certain organizations and you're like, oh, I haven't made no money at this, so I'm just going to move on to something else. But then what you start to realize is that now 20 plus years, 30 years down the road, you met somebody way back in the day that now has either advanced in their career and they're a top executive, or they're running some fund, or they're doing this, or they're doing that. And now there's some value there, you know, and you can call that person and it's not like, who are you? It's like, I've known you for 20 years, right? So we could have that conversation and make some things happen. So it's worth being in that type of bubble in order to create those opportunities. I think you're leveraging the heck out of it.
100%, Joel. And I can't tell people what you just said. I can't stress enough. Listen, if I look across the landscape of my Rolodex, I'm just dating myself using words like potpourri and Rolodex. Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, if I look across my Rolodex, I'm looking at a whole bunch of people that were previously my clients. Right. In fact, I've got a call this afternoon from a fellow by the name of Jerry Casimir. Well, for those of you that have been around a long time, Jerry Casimir was the head of the real estate account for TIA Cref, and also at one point in his tenure was head of asset management nationally. And so, again, Jerry has been my client in 20 years. We're still text messaging. Literally, he just texted me this morning, talked to you at 2:00. Right. Yeah. And so that story is echoed across the spectrum. I am still literally, I can pick up the phone and call everybody, all the leaders of these big brokerage firms. Gil Borok, CEO of Colliers, just posted a little tribute this morning to me. I'm a little grateful. But because of my brokerage networks, and there's reasons why you keep your networks healthy, you keep your networks active, you don't burn bridges, you keep your name good. Right. Yeah. Because guess what? People will remember you. And when people remember you, and they remember you when they've got something that they need to solve for, and they're like, you know what?
Yeah.
Kim, and this is me every day, all day. You know what? I bet Kim knows somebody that knows somebody. Right. And so so then you become a first phone call. I won't say that started off intentional, but it certainly got to be intentional within these past couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a beautiful thing. And here's the thing also that, you know, better than anybody, I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, but the industry at the commercial real estate, especially at the higher levels, is small, you know. And then if you look at the minorities, you're talking about a few fingers on your hands, right? So it's really small. And if you screw that up or you don't keep your name relevant, I mean, when these people call for references, hey, do you know this guy? I mean, it can either blow your deal up or it can make it happen, basically.
Absolutely. Know, so. It can be. Yeah. And it can impact your access. Fill in the blank. Access to anything. Right. Yeah, access to capital. Access to deal pipeline. Access. And so you really just want to be a solution to people. And I will say this. I was on a panel at CBRE, and we'll get to that in a minute because I'm no longer with Cushman, and I'll talk about why that's so. And and I was on a panel with CBRE a couple weeks ago, and there was a woman there. She was a DEI practitioner from one of the schools out here. And I mean, she was going on to stress, when you're reaching out to, always be a solution, always have something to offer someone. So when you're networking, and it doesn't matter your tenure in this business, listen, you could be a 0 to 5 professionals. I've got some 0 to 5 professionals that will end every call with, Kim, how can I be of service to you? How can I help you? That's golden. That puts that person, she's already in the box of being a solution. Right. In my head, she's already in that category. And whether she's got a solution for me in that moment, I see what she's doing. Right. Yeah. And I see she's positioning herself to be a resource. She's smart. She's got that'll show up for her at some point in her career.
Exactly. Exactly. And to piggyback on the back of that, you know, and do it for the right reason. I mean, not 100%. Do it because you're expecting some other, you know, type of reward on the other end, because it will come back. You know, it's just do it for the right reason, you know, and it will always pay dividends. So appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, like I said, it certainly has opened up the door to you being, you know, I know this event I'm going to be at in a little bit. You were like, I'm on 3 panels. I can't do all that. So I know. But we'll talk about that some other time. we'll definitely be connected on that when I get out to L.A. in a few weeks.
Yeah.
But let's talk real briefly about AREP. You talk about being the chair of the national chamber. What is AREP trying to do these days in order to foster minorities in the commercial real estate space? That's kind of a broad question. You can fill in the blanks.
Oh, no. You know, listen, I'm all over it. And so let's just, so AREP again, 30 plus years. AREP didn't just show up. AREP's been around. Okay. AREP's been around, but AREP's, and I say this, AREP, so we're up to 12. Memphis is loading. So if anyone knows anyone in Memphis, Let me see how I can do this. There is a, they're forming a committee, but if you know someone, and I'm careful here, drop it in my DMs, please, so I can get that, get those names to the folks that are leading the charge there in Memphis. But nevertheless, so we're now up to about 12 chapters nationally at various stages and formations. So ARAP at its core is an industry trade organization. Listen, we get so much attention from the industry, right? And from outside interests, be it the banks. And so oftentimes they think ARAP is this community-based organization. We're not planting trees. We're not, we are an industry trade organization, unlike the others, right? Mm-hmm. And P.S., the others all want to engage with us, every single last organization from ULI. ULI actually sponsors ARAP LA. NAOP, you mentioned, you name it. All the organizations have come our way in hopes to engage. And so I say this to our friends here on the phone. I mean, everybody wants access to the magic Black people, but okay, I say that. So at its core, so the pillars are really just around networking and access. Right. It all boils down. If you look across the chapters, we're technically a federation. And again, so we have no formal structured leadership, unlike BOMA, unlike NAOP. Believe it or not, they're all federations. Each chapter runs independently. Okay. And some of that's just because of the legacy of the organization. Like, listen, DC's been around since circa 95. LA's been around since 2010. Two very different markets on two very different coasts. It's hard to create one directive that's going to manage when everything is so different across the geographies. And so a national network at its core, networking and access historically within the past 3 years. And we don't even need to talk about all these pledges, announcements, and commitments since the murder of George Floyd. Yeah, of us on the phone, we already know where we're at with that. But what I will say is ARAP has become, because we've got chapters in all the major markets, in LA, DC, and LA are the flagships, ARAP has become the intersection between the commercial real estate industry and these communities of color, right? So if I look at, listen, LA, we used to be about a dozen folks hanging around. This is circa 2010, meeting up for happy hour, having a great time, networking with one another, figuring out, and if we could do a little business, that's cool too, right? Fast forward about a year later, we're like, okay, we got 50 folks. Like, there are 50 Black folks in commercial real estate in LA. We're like, no way. Then we morph to 100. We're like, okay, now wait a minute. Where are these people coming from?
Yeah.
We've got 1,500 folks on our listserv, 350, our membership, 350 registered card carrying members in LA. DC's numbers rival about the same.
Wow.
People see DFW, and for you Dallas folks on the phone, we're not supposed to say Dallas, we're supposed to say DFW, or, you know, so ARAP DFW, because we're supposed to include all the surrounding cities.
Yep.
ARAP DFW is loading. ARAP Bay Area is having an event next week, an organizing kickoff event they launched about a year ago. So there's all these chapters, but we've morphed into this intersection. Mm-hmm. So while we don't necessarily get involved on the political landscape, I will tell you right now, these mayors of all these cities, particularly these Black mayors of all these cities, because we've got a housing crisis.
Yeah.
Right. And so these mayors in their offices are like, hey, listen, we need your organization. We need your organization behind us as we move to solutions around addressing the housing crisis, which oftentimes lies in development. Right. And oftentimes, which, you know, obviously we've got all the components to align our priorities with these offices around the country. We've got all the solutions within this ecosystem called ARAP.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's moved from a nice networking group and we're going to do some things around the industry to, okay, listen, we're of prominence, we're of influence, and the leaders, our civic leaders, are now looking to the organization.
Yeah.
So it's kind of where we're at. It's pretty exciting. Opportunities abound for our members, because that translates to opportunities for our members, right? Because if cities have surplus land that they're looking to, listen, LA is the epicenter. Listen, we got everybody on the phone. We got all your people here because we've got the weather. We've got to listen. They've come in their Winnebagoes. They like to camp. I mean, listen, I'm keeping it real. Okay. They like to camp. Folks like, listen, but a lot of times they look like you and I, And so, you know, we just have a new charge now. And it's really just being flexible within the organization to pivot, to address the needs of the people and to address our communities. And I know I'm going on, but there's so many touch points about it, because what you also have, and I call our communities historically overlooked, not under anything, not under resourced, not under privileged, not under represented, although we are all of that, but those monikers that make us sound less than.
Yep.
We are in historically overlooked communities now experiencing a surge in investment. You've got all these incentives. You've got QLC incentives. You've got all this dry powder sitting on the sidelines, focused in on opportunities around development in our communities. And, you know, that creates some challenges for folks like yourself, Joel, and folks like, you know, other developers in our ecosystem that are trying to be a part of the solution and trying to develop projects. But, you know, there's some systemic things in place, and that's a whole nother. We don't have enough time.
Yeah, that's a whole big issue. But, you know, I'm glad you mentioned what you did, because, you know, one of the things that we still hear, especially if you go to these events where it might be the state pension funds and things of that sort, you know, you hear this argument of, we can't find no minority developers. We can't find no people of color that do this and do that. And that's just simply untrue. You know, and to your point, now they have organizations that they can look to and say, okay, well, they're sitting right there. Just give them a call. They'll give you the whole Rolodex, to use the term, of these individuals, you know? And so you guys have kind of proven that that's garbage. And we knew it was garbage all along, but it's being proven even more so today. So,
you know. No, 100%. And I'm glad you say that, because that puts me in the epicenter of it, right? And I will tell you, listen, many of the institutions, hi, friends. I've got, you know, networks, folks within my network that are leading these impact funds and capital raising for these institutions. And again, you know, I'm constantly putting deal flow in front of these fund managers, right? Because these are all folks in the network. Listen, it's a beautiful thing that we have folks finally, and this is the first time in my tenure, that we've got folks in all positions. We've got folks that have access to capital. 98.7% of capital has traditionally been managed by white males. It still is, but we've got some folks in position. I'm not going to name any names, because they go, Kim, you just made my inbox feel like, don't. but they do. And so I'm constantly putting deal flow in front of them, in front of the capital folks. The hurdles are high. I mean, we know this, right? Like the minimum equity checks and the return requirements, those investment mandates create, but the opportunities are there. The other area where I'm seeing, like, I'm getting woohoo is in the private debt market. The family offices, listen, and I'm sure you're hearing about the family offices more and more.
Yep.
I think a lot of it's driven by the QLZ legislation and the opportunities that they see, which a lot of times the qualified opportunity zones are in our communities, right?
Yeah, overlooked communities. Yep.
Historically overlooked, right? Nobody was checking for our community for a long time. And so now you've got the family office. In fact, I had one in my inbox this morning. And so she leads a family office, and they're of scale. Listen, I think, you know, family office is 50 million and up. Listen, I've got one family office. I spoke at a private debt conference here in Laguna Beach.
Of all places.
not in South LA, but
it wasn't Watts.
Not this one. And so afterwards, you know, I met some real cool folk. Probably some folk might even be on the phone here. A couple of people I'll just shout out, like Vernon with Beckford with DLS, and came, approached me and some other folk. So I'm on this panel, and it's me and five other folks in the, it was on QOZ's re-emerging markets. I don't even like that, because it implies that our market, that our communities are re-emerged. Our community's been here, right? Our communities weren't a market, so to speak, because again, we're historically overlooked, right? So we weren't really a market, but now we are. We're a re-emerging market. And so I'm on this panel, and so I'm sitting here, and it's, you know, listen, it's me and five white guys, right? So I'm letting them go do their thing. And they're talking about our communities on, you know, and talking about what they're doing, but not from our community perspective. So I let them go. I lead kind of quiet. So I'm looking a little conspicuous on the panel, just because, you know, I'm the one one of these things is not like the other, and she hasn't spoken. So I'm letting that go intentionally. And I'm letting the moderator just kind of like, you know, he's going to get to me, but I'm not even just sitting there comfortably, because that's a demonstration of in and of itself, like taking a little long to engage one of these things on the panel. So they're talking and talking. I always lead when I'm asked to speak with, our communities are not commodities. Boom, like that changed the whole tone. You could see the audience perk up, because, you know, at one point it's just wah, 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 wah. And now they're like, hey, listen, she's got something to say. I've got a fellow on the left, a fellow on the right. A fellow on the left is part of a family office that is so prominent. They're on their fourth $1 billion QLZ fund, their family office, like their platform rivals some of the institutional players, right? That's how big they're looking for you, right? They're looking for Kim. We'd like, I think I shared this with you, Joe. We'd like to meet new friends, right? We'd like to meet, you know, operators, any operators in your network that you'd like to introduce us to. We're interested in deals. Here's our investment mandate, et cetera, et cetera. And so the other fellow on the right is a prominent tax attorney in the QLZ space. He happens to be the moderator. So I start talking, and they're like, hey, listen, we need to, you know, would you be interested in testifying before Congress? And I'm like, okay, I'm like, okay, wait, slow down. Yeah, slow down, because I need to make sure I'm on the right side of anything before I go testifying before Congress. But nevertheless, I say all that to say, listen, there are whole conferences of, I was at one last week, Pure Family Office. They are looking for investments. Their mandates are not quite as aggressive as some of the other, you know, institutional players. But I say all that to say there's diversity in LP capital out there. And it's just, we, to as people of color, listen, we're making roads into, or we're on the radar of the institutional players, because now we've got people in position and everybody's made their pledges, announcements, and commitments, right, since 2020. But we're also on the radar at a family office. The issue is, when's the last time you went to a family? How many people you know with a family? I mean, we're not in that network, right? And so I, fortunately, have been allowed, and I'm saying, like, a glimpse into, like, a little foot, little toe into that network, that world.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
No. But I mean, it's very true. And, you know, you started off by saying it was in Laguna Beach. I mean, that makes the point right there. Right. It wasn't in off Crenshaw Boulevard. It was, you know, it was Laguna Beach. We know what county that's in. Right. So, and we know what that's all about. Right. So, you know, need I say more?
Yep.
But, you know, hopefully it's all changing. You know, I watched the movie, Emancipation the other day. You got to say, okay, you know, yeah, things aren't, you know, perfect, but, you know, it's good to see some change, without a doubt.
So, and I agree. And I think the change is coming, for me, from my vantage point, the change is coming in people in position.
Yeah.
People in position for the first time. Listen, there's no leakage. Like, we've got folks in all positions, right, to be able to affect some change. And I think, because implicit bias is implicit bias. Listen, we're all comfortable with who we're comfortable with, right? The reality of it is, these are my friends on this episode, right? But the same goes for what we call the legacy network, right? So listen, if 98.7% of capital is controlled by white, well, guess where that capital's going?
Yeah, exactly.
Just naturally, right? Unless they make an intentional and concerted effort to not go to friends and family, it's going to friends and family. And
the same channels it always goes to.
That's it. Yeah. But now we've got some folks in position to network, you know, myself included. You know, I'm in a position to, you know, I'm being asked. And it's not even like I don't go out and look for business. I mean, like, because I'm so forward facing, I call it washing up on the shore, right? I mean, Joe, you know, like, every single day something, oh, well, look who's in the inbox. Yeah. But I'm in a position to affect some change and to pay and to get folks involved. And so I consider myself a servant leader. So if I hear something, or if you're looking to meet new friends, right, I'm going to introduce you to folks that have track record and folks that may have projects that are of interest to you, Mr. Family Office, because, you know, because I can.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, and that's part of the reason why we wanted you on the show, to be able to show that, you know, those doors are opening and that those resources are out there. Let me ask you one thing. This is kind of off subject, but I know you can flow like that. So there's one thing that's been coming up with these pledges, if you will, with money that's being made available. And it's like, okay, we'll do this. But you mentioned about the bar. And one of the bars is, well, we won't do your first deal. And it's like, okay, but I've got the dream team. You know, I got Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Magic on my team with Kobe sitting on the bench. You're not going to do my first deal?
No track record.
But the team has a track record. Yeah, right. But and that's the argument. So what do you say in situations like that in order to combat that? For because we get a lot of people in some of the organizations we're going to talk about in a minute where they're coming up against that.
Listen, I'm still going to put you in front of all the institutions. I'm still going to put you, if you've got a compelling enough story and a project, even if you tell me your minimum equity check is $35 million and your return requirement and you need track record and you need, you know, the operator needs site control. And then I'm like, okay, well, listen, you're just reducing the number of folks that I can print in front of you, but I'm still going to put the folks in front of you because And I like the one QO, the one family office. Listen, we need to meet new friends. We're never going to affect change and we're never going to get folks. I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah,
I think it's a conundrum, right? Because it's the age old, like, how do I get? I've got a track record. It's just a story that's been created, right? And so, but I still, just because I can, I still make introductions. I still send a list. You know, here's Joel, here's if there's enough of a story, I'll still put it in front of folks that have come to me looking for operators, right? Or looking for developers or co-GPs or what have you, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the age. Oh, what I also do, and I've got a network across the country of, and this is kind of a little bit of my strategy, but I've got a network of capital advisors and capital placement agents across the country. Mm-hmm. And so if a sponsor is just about ready, or real quick story, and this will just punctuate. Got a developer out here in LA who's developing Section 8 housing for the past 40 years. He's probably done 200 projects, close to $1 billion, all by himself. Maybe a little bit of friends and family here and there, but never any co-investor, right? So he's approaching 80. He's ready at this point. He's like, okay, you know, it's probably time to exit. Probably it's a wrap. He had no idea that he could explore other structures, other investment via other opportunities, right? Connected him with one of my capital placement agents. And P.S., I am not a capital placement agent, nor am I FINRA licensed. I'm a connector. So, I, you know, but nevertheless, placed him with, let's just make that clear in case anybody's watching. Introduced him to one of my capital placement agents. She's working with him right now, recreating a story, recreating his deck, putting it all together. Mm-hmm. And they'll look at making introductions, getting him ready, right, for outside interest. If a guy like that, you know, hadn't necessarily, wasn't even aware of opportunities, and that's a hell of a track record he has, right? Then, and he's just now at the place where through one introduction, now we're getting him ready for that. That's step one. But in terms of, listen, there are a lot of groups out here and a lot of folks out here that are emerging managers or that are doing deals. Just, I don't even have an answer. Just got to continue to chip away and just continue to network and hopefully find the right place. I will say the family markets, because the family market bar is a little lower, you know, like they'll do $10 million and up, you know, is there in their mandates. But again, they want to see some track record too.
Yeah.
But just not as rigid. So right. I'm telling folks, listen, there's this booming, like it's hot. And they, so.
Yeah. You know, and the thing about it, like you said, you got the group that wants to meet some friends and this, that, and the other. I think it's still important because even like what we were saying early on in the conversation, that you meet people and 10 years down the road, it's like, oh yeah, I remember meeting you 10 years ago and what you up to now, right? Mm-hmm. And the conversation is a lot more warmer than it would be if you didn't have that introduction at all 10 years ago, right?
100%.
So still make the contact, still make the introduction, and you never know where it will lead to, you know, which is a good thing. So appreciate you doing that. You know, one thing I wanted to mention here, you had mentioned about impact versus ESG as one of the things that, you know, is important to discuss. What's your thoughts on that? What is ESG for the sake of our audience first? Let's define our terms and then talk about the comparisons there.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because it gets conflated so much, so much. I mean, even when I was with Cushman, you know, I remember speaking to one of the managing principals and so, you know, and I was like, listen, like there's this surge of investment in these communities. It's all around impact investment. He was like, oh, well, we've got ESG. I go, oh, it's not the same. Yeah. Not the same, right? And so ESG is a framework. I mean, impact investing is investing. Mm-hmm. So ESG is, you know, environmental, social, we all know environmental, social governance. It's a framework, so to speak, around a number, just what it says, right? Around environmental initiatives, goals and strategies, social initiative, you know, which can fall under some of this
bunch of stuff,
a bunch of stuff, right? And then governance. And so impact investing, which is where kind of I move in, is just that it's investing. You see companies doing a lot of promoting around ESG and we're doing this and we're doing that and we're for the greater good and this and that. But are you investing?
Yeah.
Right. Are you investing? Like, don't use the word impact unless you're actually investing. And I don't necessarily mean development or real estate investment. I mean, even if you're investing around things around renewable energy. Mm-hmm. Right. And we could talk all day because all of these things impact our community and there's community solar and there's a lot of things that people confuse ESG with philanthropy a lot of times. Right. Like if you're going to Habitat. I mean, you're going to build homes and you're going to help folks in the clean up the beach, right? Then that's doing good, but that's not impact. Impact is investing. I mean, are you investing in community solar to help address some of the social inequities around climate resilience, around renewable energy? Are you investing in these, in the affordable housing? Are you creating opportunities to address the food desert? Mm-hmm. Right. Are you the medical, the health inequities? Are you like all of that requires investment? And so that's the distinction in my mind. And I see folks once in a while perk up, folks that I know that have been pretty active in the ESG space for the past 20 years. And I can tell it drives them crazy when the two things are conflated because they really are two very different things. But the differentiator is the investment piece.
Yeah. And that's a big point. And, you know, just to kind of go back to this for a minute, you mentioned about George Floyd and me and another group actually, as part of a study at Rutgers University, was putting together a list of all the companies that committed money and how much they committed and whether that money actually got out the door, whether it was invested. And what are you seeing from your perspective? Is that money actually going out the door or, you know, is it smoke and mirrors? Is it, you know, what's going on out there from your perspective?
Listen, you know the answer to that. I mean, like, I think that, I think
that it's a show, right?
A little bit. Listen, it's proven to be performed, you know, listen, and I don't know, you know, the intentions may have been well and good 3 years ago. Right. And, but for whatever reason, the mechanisms weren't in place to see it succeed. Right. And a lot of that, again, is in these mandates and just like you almost cancel it out. Right. Yeah. Like, and so, yeah, I think that, and we're on the phone with friends here. There are some folks out there that believe that there's a window that's opening. Mm-hmm. Right. And green is the new black. And also perhaps this window is aligned with the next election cycle. But right now, and listen, there's a growing chorus of voices that are like in the of investors within some of these funds that have these impact funds that are like, I didn't tell you that I want my money earmarked towards this greater good. Climate change is a hoax. I mean, you know what I mean? So, yeah. So there's this energy around that. And so to answer your question, no, by and large, I mean, we know there are some folks that are indeed benefiting. I do know some success stories. I have some success stories within ARAP, but by and large, it's probably, you know, 1 to 50 ratio of folks that are actually seeing some of this capital versus folks that are still knocking on the door and trying to get their deals in front of folks and trying to make themselves known.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to the same thing we talked about early on that, you know, I can't find nobody. So we got this allocation. And since I can't, let me go put it back in the general fund. And, you know, let's just keep it quiet and move on and not talk about it anymore.
And that's no bueno.
You know,
right? Because you didn't meet your you didn't meet the investor's requirements once you put it back, right? Yeah. And so, and then that also is a double-edged sword, because that for the naysayers, that also reinforces. Yeah. See, I told you this was a bunch of didn't work.
Yeah, I know.
Just leave it alone. Let's keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah,
with our 98.7%.
There you go. Send the money down the same path. So let's talk briefly about, you know, because you mentioned about AREP and all they're doing, but you also wanted to address the ecosystem between REAP and some of the other organizations that are out there. What would you want to share with us about that and how it's not competitive, it's more collaborative?
Completely. And you just said it, Jill. So it's an entire ecosystem. And so, and this is what I love about it, right? So you've got this organization out here. And listen, no one's stepping on each other. Like, we're so collaborative. Like, you know, I'm a member of Reese, for example, as are you and a bunch of folks on the phone, I'm sure. And listen, Reese interacts with AREP. I mean, the Reese conference is in LA coming up. You best believe the Reese panel is smattered with AREP members. There's all this cross-pollination. Project REAP, for example. So if you look at the ecosystem, we've kind of got our senior executives or senior folks involved in REAP, right? Reese, right? We've got our next generation of leaders and emerging leaders who go through the REAP program. Listen, that REAP alumni never ceases to amaze me. That thing is strong. That alumni network is powerful. We've got all those REAP members in the assorted AREP chapters across the country. Monika Bowman, phenomenal. Talk to her. I just talked to her the other day. Like, we're always collaborating. We've got a scholarship fund where we put AREP LA, for example, we allow our members to apply for a scholarship fund, and then we put them through Project REAP.
Okay.
Project Destin, our college students. Listen, we've got college students currently that are members of AREP that are in Project Destin. So those are kind of your college age. So we say AREP ends up being the catch-all. AREP, and I say AREP is 18 to 80, probably 18 to. And so we catch all the professionals because, and then we create, and I say, it's kind of, I'm from South LA originally, it's a South LA colloquialism, it may be global, but we say we create space and opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. And so we create space and opportunity for this entire ecosystem. In addition to AREP, there's REAL, Real Estate Association of Latinx. Total cross-pollination. There's FIRE, Filipinos and Institutional Real Estate. They've got like 10 chapters around. They just launched Manila. Jennifer Taylor, who is sort of leader of their national infrastructure. So there's all these, we're collaborative because we're all in this together. Absolutely zero competition, if anything, where we're constantly collaborating and cross-pollinating. And there's no redundancy. It's just, we all have a different initiative. And I will say this. We serve our members. And this is when I talk to sponsors. Listen, I've got 30 sponsors of AREP LA, right? 10 of the global brokerage firms or national brokerage firms and global are sponsors of AREP LA. ULI is a sponsor. You name it. So we say this. We support our members. The industry supports us and expects nothing of us. We're not here to solve your DEI situation. That's not what we do. That's not what we do. Mm-hmm. We appreciate the industry supporting us as we support our members. That's a very big distinction. We're not going to sit down with, and if I got any sponsors on the phone, we can certainly talk, but I have the same candid conversation. We're not going to sit down with your HR department. Mm-hmm. We're not. Or some organizations do that. We don't do that. We're serving the needs of our members. Now, to the point, to the extent that our sponsors can provide resources and can sponsor our networking events and do other things, then that's where we are. But all these organizations are about supporting the people.
Yeah, yeah. Appreciate that. And for you guys who don't know, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So just for our audience there. Now, Kim, we generally open up at about 30 minutes for Q&A, so we're a little bit beyond that today, but that's okay because it's been great dialogue and we can always have you back, right?
This ain't
a one and done type situation, so we can do that. But we're going to go ahead and open up the lines now. And if you guys have any questions, you can raise your virtual hand or put those in the chat and we will get those questions over to Kim from that standpoint. One thing you wanted to, while we're waiting on those to come in, that you made mention to that we were going to talk about is access to capital. That's always a big issue. You covered a lot of ground related to that. Was there anything else that you specifically think that we need to touch on as it relates to access to capital? Because at the end of the day, that's what it all boils down to.
It really does.
You can have all the skill in the world. If you can't get money to do nothing, it ain't going to happen.
So. Yeah, you need a deck. Listen, don't even, if you don't have a deck, I mean, that's just my bottom line. I mean, like, you got to have a deck. You got to have a deck. Like, that's just the one thing that I want to stress. And so there are ways and resources to help you put a deck together to tell your story. But, you know, I just want to leave folk with that because, you know, a lot of folks will reach out and they've got, you know, an idea or a concept around. And listen, there's a lot of interesting things that could be done. There's so much opportunity. Listen, medical retail, medtail is a sector. Mm-hmm. Listen, all of our communities are health equity deserts.
Sure.
Okay. All of them. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's opportunity to bring in medical. So that's a niche. Techtainment. We're on the West Coast here. I'm sure Atlanta's the same way. There's a lot of energy around studio content creation in our communities. Want to shout out Stocker Street Creative, a couple of ARAP members, Sheree Franklin, James Doherty, and some others that are developing a content creation, a studio space in the Crenshaw District in South LA. And so that's kind of a techtainment initiative. So there's all these, but you got to have a deck.
Yeah.
Before you even start making phone calls. Like, don't even start making phone calls until you've got a deck together.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you about that just briefly. You know, obviously, we go back in the day, right? So we use terms, Rolodex, and all the rest of it. So, which, I mean, you think about it. When you used to leave a job back in the day, if you didn't take your Rolodex, if you didn't take nothing else, you took your Rolodex, right? Yeah. That was the most important thing. But today, you know, there's a lot of digital decks as opposed to PDF physical decks. What's your recommendation there?
I mean, just a Dropbox, and it doesn't even, I was just speaking with someone yesterday. Listen, it doesn't have to be the shiniest thing in town, right? But it just needs to have, it needs to be substantial. It needs to have some substance to it and all the right things in it, right? To tell your story, that may you listen, you may need to invest to get that deck, meaning you may need to hire, and I'm constantly putting folks and connecting folks to my capital advisor connections to start that process. But I mean, it doesn't come free. So that's
another cost.
Yeah, it's another cost, but you know, it's the cost of doing business.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of the day, you gotta get done what's gotta be done. So
absolutely
certainly appreciate that. And the other thing as it relates to access to capital, you know, the one of the issues that you often run across is institutional capital and getting deals done at a below institutional levels. What are your thoughts on that? Because as you said, you know, a lot of these places, they're saying, you know, you got to have a $10 million minimum, $50 million minimum. You know, are there resources that you find available for deals that are less than that, where there's smaller equity checks? So the friends and family issue that people often run across, because most Black folks don't have friends and family that could write a $1 million check. So
no.
What's your thoughts on that?
I get what comes my way, which happens to be more the institutional and the private debt space. And so, yeah, probably the minimum that I probably is like a $10 million. I mean, I'm sure there's other opportunities. Another thing that we're seeing, and I don't know enough about it to really speak on it, but we're having these conversations about like kind of crowdfunding opportunities. And I know, you know, there's a lot of energy around. Everybody wants to raise a fund. And if you talk to any capital advisor, they're like, listen, that's not, that'll take you 5 years and you need the relationships and the whole thing. But I know that there's, and I'm starting to see, because one of the complaints is there's so much investment, right? Surging into our communities, so much outside investment. Listen, I'm seeing outside developers now, listen, and I get contacted coming into markets. Listen, they're looking for like a front person, like they know, because in LA, for example, it's percolating below the surface. And folks are like, okay, all these nice, shiny buildings. Who are these people? Who are these developers? And are they from within the community? Or are they, oh, whoa, it's happening. It's happening fast. Yeah. And it's reading like we're about to be displaced. We are so about to be displaced. So a lot of these developers that are coming in now, I'm hearing about developers that are coming in now that are looking for kind of cultural consultants to kind of be a forward face for them as they're, but again, that still does not address the issue of why the Joels, right, have so many impediments to, or so many hurdles to jump over. So I'm encouraged by, there are some initiatives out there. Listen, even if it's $1,000, like allow the community, right, an opportunity, and the layperson in the community, an opportunity to invest for obvious reasons in some projects, right? And moving forward. And I know here in LA, Mayor Bass, we got our first Black woman as mayor. of the city. Listen, she's already launched two executive directives. One executive director, one was to remove all the hurdles from development, right? Limit the amount of time it takes, eliminate some of the red tape, like let's create a faster track to this thing. Executive director number two was identify all the surplus land, right? And all the surplus property, right? So she's putting things in action to move the ball, but that community participation piece is getting louder and louder and louder with each groundbreaking, with each groundbreaking.
Yeah. Like that's actually, no. That's a great point, because if you could get you could solve for that problem that we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you need that smaller amount. If you're able to crowdfund the community and say, hey, you could be a part owner of this, you know, it becomes of value. And especially in areas where people are saying, look, I don't want to move out of my community, but it's blighted and something's got to happen here. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a way to solve for the gentrification issues that are going on in a lot of areas also.
No, 100%. Listen, gentrification in and of itself, listen, some investment is necessary. I mean, let's face it, our communities have experienced, because of systemic issues, our communities have experienced years of disinvestment, right? Compare our communities with communities across town, right? Even if I look at South LA, listen, my mother, my parents moved into South LA. They were one of the first Black families 60 some odd years ago, still in the same house, to live across the 110 freeway. Blacks weren't allowed to. We couldn't live across. So, and then of course, you know, once they moved to the area, started white flight in LA, and the rest is history. But if you look at our communities, it's systemic. Like we even look at the trees. Check this out. You look at the trees in South LA, you look at the trees go straight up. You go across town. Okay. The trees create these beautiful canopies, right? And you're like, okay, that's so weird. No, it's not. That's intentional. Trees are going straight up. Those trees weren't planted intentionally so the helicopters can see.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. Helicopters can't see when there's a canopy.
Okay. All right. Well, shoot. You got me on that one.
That's part two.
That's a whole nother level.
Part two.
That is deep.
So yeah, you got to let the community participate, and the community's not having it. Listen, this Generation Z, they're not playing. They're not playing. They just showed up in COVID. Listen, we've got some quote unquote hood journalists. they are galvanizing. They're not having it. And our communities need some investment. It's just our communities need to participate in it, because the gentrification danger is the displacement part. It's gentrification in and of itself. Some investment. Our communities need some investment, because we've experienced years of disinvestment. Mm-hmm. It's the displacement piece that makes it
really difficult. Very good point. Very good point. So, all right. Well, we're about to wrap up here. I always try to keep it to about 60 minutes. So I appreciate that. Out of respect for your time. What else do you think we need to address that hasn't been addressed, or any other points that you want to cover that you think are important that our audience needs to know?
Yeah, I mean, I would just encourage everybody to get involved in any of these organizations that are out here, really, because again, like we have to, if not us, then who? If not us, then who? Yeah. Right. As we're talking about the opportunities around housing. And again, I've seen the explosion in the industry in the past 10 years, particularly around professionals coming in housing. The 0 to 5 professionals, all of our students that come in to the organization, they want impact work, right? Everybody, this next generation, this Generation Z, they want to do work for the good. I'm like, but let me put you in front of CBRE brokerage and associate. No, not interested. I want to go work for that developer. Yeah. So just network. Mm-hmm. Galvanize. Listen, if it's not us, then who? We are the intersection between the commercial real estate industry and our communities. If not us, then who? And if we're asleep, we'll look up and like, well, what just happened here? Right.
Yeah. You want to be part of what just happened here, you know?
Want to be part of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, that reminds me of, you know, Mandela basically telling the people of South Africa, you know, you're playing small doesn't benefit the world. Mm-hmm. And it's such a powerful statement. Yeah. I mean, why play small? You know, if not, how did you say it? If not us, then who?
Yeah.
I mean, why? Who are you waiting on?
Who are you waiting on?
You know, and as you get older, you like, you know what? Time to get to work.
No.
You ain't got another 30 years to play in this game. You know?
It sure is. And this is why I say it. And I know we're about to close out here, but this is why, you know, I cringe. And there are a number of us that cringe when we see these articles, like a media outlet ran an article about, you know, big brokerage in the DEI. Listen, first of all, the barometer of how well people of color are doing in this industry is not gauged by how many Black folks are working for some of these big firms. Yeah. Right. Because you can walk. I'll tell him, and I think he'd be comfortable with me telling me this. So the CEO of Colliers was at our breakfast a couple weeks ago. He goes, Kim, he walks up to me afterwards. He goes, Kim, I had no idea. I go, Gil, of course you had no idea. I said, the industry, meaning I'm in a room with 170 Black folks. He goes, I just gave a quote to the Commercial Observer yesterday. These are exact words. He goes, I think I need to retract that quote. Wow. Because they're looking at the barometer of, from their lens, their solution, right? We need to get more people. There's plenty of us out here doing it. Not saying that the numbers can't improve, but I'm seeing more folks like yourself, Joel, and your folks on the line. And I'm seeing the 0 to 5 professionals. Listen, they want to go work for Joel. They don't want to go work for Cushman & Wakefield. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they want opportunity to be a part of the solution and to get involved in community development and get involved in serving, right? Yeah. In a service aspect of the business. So it's just an interesting time to be alive.
Yeah. Without a doubt. So, well, you know, look, this has been a great, great discussion. You know, certainly looking forward to getting together with you out there in LA. And, you know, we're going to meet some friends.
We're going to meet some friends, right? We're going to meet some friends because that's how it starts. You may not have anything for them now, but again, listen, you never know. Yeah. It's all about access. And that's what I'm just trying to do is just open up access and pipeline to folk.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk more offline because there's a lot of stuff that's in our pipeline and under contract and everything else that I haven't even shared with you. So we'll talk and it should be a great conversation. But awesome. You know, other than that, it's been fantastic. I'm glad we've had this chance to get together and have this chat. And I guess I should have recorded our other conversation from the other day. We would have had 2 podcasts.
That's seriously, like it was a lot of content.
I know, but it's fantastic. And Kim, it's always great talking with you about it. And you know, any final words for our guests today? If not us, then who? Anything else?
Listen,
go home with that one.
Yep, I'm going to leave you with one, but I'm going to say just thank you, Joel, for having me on. Thank you to your listeners on the podcast. Super exciting. I just appreciate everybody in this industry. Oh, my God. I appreciate everyone in this industry. And again, consider this a call to action. Like, this is a charge, and I'm going to end. This is, in the words of Malcolm Johnson, which I'm sure everybody on this phone knows of Malcolm, if you don't know him personally, let's run this race.
There you go. Well, hey, y'all, this has been fantastic. Thank you for being here today. This has been the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. A special thank you to our favorite guest here, Kimberly Brown, for all her exciting work. And Kim, just keep it up. Keep it
thank
going,
you.
Girl. We certainly
serving
appreciate you and all you do. Yeah. So thank you so much. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Joel. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to write a brief review. And as always, continue to invite, share, and subscribe.